Hey, this is Devin from Ghostfish Files, reminding you to tune in to Ghostfish Files every other Saturday on www.ghostfishfiles.net.tc at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll see you there. Oh man, I really gotta get out of here. Later.
Hi, this is Lisa Butler, American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena. Our website is aaevp.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Just when you thought it was safe to get drunk, then say hi to your friends.
Drunken Dialing.
Drunken Dialing.
Just when you thought it was safe. Then make that booty call.
Drunken Dialing.
Drunken Dialing.
Oh.
Oh.
Midnight.
Oh. Oh.
There's a kangaroo kickboxing in my
body. Oh.
www.drunkendialing.com.
Good night. Say good night.
Hi, this is Tamara Thorne, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk with the hosts of Ghostbusting, Scott L. and Doug.
This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. The broadcasters of your area, in voluntary cooperation with federal, state, and local authorities, have developed this system to keep you informed in the event of an emergency. If this had been an actual emergency, the attention signal you just heard would have been provided by official information or instruction. This thing serves survival of the emergency. This concludes this test of the emergency broadcast system.
Ah, so we're back on the air. Okay. we were like
ghost
mid...
Ghost lights.
I know, we were mid-sentence talking about ghost lights. We come back on the air just like that. Ding. Anyway, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And, of course, our guest is Robert Bruce, author of Psychic Self-Defense. I need to write
Practical
it.
Practical Psychic Self-Defense.
Practical Psychic Self-Defense. And, of course, we talked with Scott L. and Robert and Will. We talked about, crossing running water, that kind of thing. And that's what we did in the first segment. But this segment, well, first let's finish up. Okay, let's talk about ghost lights real quick. Because you're in Australia.
Yeah.
Okay. Around here, in the United States anyway, in Canada, what we have is we've got these ghost lights. And usually it's you'll go to a road or a field, you know, a large, vast expanse, and unexplained lights will happen. And they're usually close to the ground, and they usually swing. It looks like the swinging of a lantern kind of thing. And the usual story is, like, in this particular case, Moody's Light in Indiana, a farmer is out searching for his daughter or his daughter's paramour or something like that, and they're... And what you see is you see a light in the distance. And then, of course, when you go and try and get to the light, you can never get to it. There's a couple alternatives to that, that, like, some lights actually try and get to you, right? That's not Moody's light, but other lights come and they try and get to you, but you can't, you know, it doesn't actually ever get you because it's just a light. And so there's other things, and they usually explain it away by saying it's swamp gas. Anything similar out in Australia?
I've come across things like that in different areas. It could be some kind of glowing gas. It could also be some kind of natural electrical phenomenon occurring. It could also be orb-type nature spirits. They can manifest quite brightly and visibly to the naked eye. You may find that's a particularly powerful area energetically, and areas where these lights appear, they could be spirit lights.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say, really.
So, that's what we were talking about on the break, you guys. Just so everybody knows, and I'm glad I got your take on it, because who knows? We may take an hour or so and go out this upcoming weekend and look for Moody's light, the supposedly the ghost of Old Man Moody, swinging his lantern looking for, I think it was his daughter. But I'll have to brush up on that legend to see what's happening. I wanted to talk more about astral projection, because you mentioned it. And I know that your website, I think when I went there, it said right across it, astral dynamics and things like that, right? Astral projection, do you astral project yourself?
Yes, I do. My first book was called Astral Dynamics, and that is actually a good description of what I do, because everything paranormal has the middle ground is it all relates to the astral. Everything connects to around the astral.
Mm-hmm. And how,
even ghosts.
How does it work? Because I've read several different theories about it, and I've astral projected twice myself, but only once that I was in control. And people tend to think that it's, you go to this astral plane and things like that, and things are different. Yet now I'm reading a book, and I don't remember who it's by, but I'm reading a book that says it's not necessarily an astral plane. It's like physically right here. It's all like right here. It's just maybe shifted in vibration. So I'm wondering what you've experienced in along those lines. Where is this astral plane?
Well, both. The real, what you say right here, I define the closest part of the astral dimension to the physical as being the real time zone. And most people, when they first get out of body, they will find themselves like a ghost in the real world. They may be in their own bedroom or somewhere that they know. And it is basically in real time. It's like like being a ghost yourself in reality. Now, most people don't stay there very long, usually anything from seconds to a couple of minutes, and then they tend to shift into the astral planes, and the astral planes bear little or no resemblance to the physical world. And typically the astral planes are layered, and they are set out very much like planes, if you could imagine them. I give illustrations on how this is laid out in my book, Astral Dynamics. And on my website, there's a lot of free stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
But once you leave the real time zone, most people will go into the second or third astral plane levels. And these are heavily populated with projectors. But I'm talking about people who are sleep projecting. They're not aware that they're projecting. And you've got a mixture of people who are rushing around, excited, and people who are standing there half asleep, wondering where they are. And these places typically look like a gigantic shopping mall. There are lots of tunnels and corridors and lots of shops and different areas, interspaced with areas of park and building areas. You might slip out of a mall into a park, and there's some couple of skyscrapers and a few buildings around, and it's higgledy-piggledy. It's you know, doesn't make a lot of sense. Whereas the higher astral planes beyond this are more structured, and you will find even the particular planes are broken up into realms. You can find highly structured type realms which have you could even say civilizations there. And higher again, they start to become more and more abstract and colourful until you get to the very high astral planes, and they bear like absolutely no relationship to reality here. It's quite abstract and beautiful.
Are there people? Are like the people there in the higher planes, have they necessarily ever been human or living in bodies here on Earth, or are they more like what you would think of as like angels or demons. I know demons are thought to be bad by modern society, but, you know, that wasn't always true. But, you know, non-human entities.
I think so. I've encountered angels and demons, spirit master types, and various deity types in the astral. And, I would say that these beings have probably never been human. They seem to be like a different species by large, particularly the angels and demons, which are not really human.
And do you think they fathom the earth plane? Like, do they know about it, understand it, have perhaps seen it, or have they just, like, heard about it? Like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, there are people here in our world who don't believe in ghosts. Sure, they've heard about them, but they're like, I never saw one, I don't know what it is, I don't care, it's not for me. Do you think there's non-human entities on the other side, you know, maybe in the higher astral planes, that, oh, I've heard about people, but I don't believe in them, or something like that? Does it work the other way?
Very, very likely. It's very possible. It is a huge, huge interdimensional universe. I think from a conservative estimate, the physical dimension, the physical universe, is probably 1% of the greater reality. So we are actually a very small slice somewhere in that mixture, with this vast interdimensional spectrum around us.
Fascinating. And can you, like, if you run across people in the other planes, do they know that you are currently a traveling, you know, out-of-body person? Like, can they tell by looking? Because I've read Robert Monroe's books. And are they able to tell that you're just traveling and just visiting? Or do they, you know, just deal with you as anyone else over there?
Yeah, sometimes, depending on the nature of the level you're on, if you come across a structured realm, they generally seem to know that you're a projector, and they're usually not very friendly. They're sort of, you get shunned a bit. They don't seem to want to have anything to do with projectors.
Well, Robert Monroe had said that some of them were actually on the jealous side. That some of them perhaps had been human before. This was his projection, his postulation. I don't know it myself. I just know what I read. And he had said that it was some of them may long for their experiences when they were humans, when they were living, you know, here in a body, and they actually have a sense of jealousy. Of course, he might be talking about closer planes in that particular case.
That's possible. I haven't come across anything like that per se, but it's possible. I've encountered deceased spirits in the astral. There are areas in the astral which can be classed as like astral hospitals, where people who have died and been traumatized by life, and they seem to rest there for a long time until they move on. There are other areas which seem to be like heavens, or way stations between the astral and the heavenly realms, where you find a lot of spirits. It's a vast area.
What does a ghost look like over there? Have you run into actual, like... Because here, I've seen one ghost one time ever. I know I'm a ghost hunter of many years, but I've only ever actually seen one. And I know what he looked like. He was as real looking as you or me, and I almost hit him with my car. And but what do they look like over there, or do you not see ghosts when you're there?
You don't really see ghosts. If you see a ghost on the other side, it looks like a person. It's the same if you're in the astral. in real time, and let's say I projected into a haunted house, the spirits there would appear to be like people.
And could you talk to them and find out what they're thinking, or are they not going to have anything to do with you?
That would be possible. It would be possible. It depends on their nature, and whether you can get any sense out of them or not. A lot of ghosts are... there's some different types of ghosts. Some you get which are like repeating events of their life,
mm-hmm.
And particularly their death.
Mm-hmm.
You find they repeat this over and over again in a cycle. They are like echoes, you could say, of the past. And it seems to be that if you have an area which has a lot of energy in it and a traumatic event happens there, like somebody dies a horrible death, it seems to leave like an imprint upon the physical universe there in that area. And as long as there's enough energy, there's like a little loop occurs, and they keep repeating over and over and over again. And you will often see, if you're clairvoyant, you'll often see these things. Sometimes they can be visible to the naked eye. I was in a house a few weeks ago up here in Perth, where we had a lot of manifestation and spirit influences going on. And I walked through the house, and as usual, it's got this cold, creepy atmosphere, and you can sense the energy. And I'm sort of walking around quietly sensing, and I get into the hallway, and there in front of me is a body hanging from the ceiling by a belt. And, bloated face, and I said, hello.
Wow.
And then I walked into the bathroom to wash my hands, and I glanced to the side at the bathtub, and the bath is full of blood, and there's this bloated female corpse there with a razor in her hand. I said, hello, this is not normal.
Wow.
And, but these things repeated, and they tend to repeat like that.
So there's no intelligence.
In that sort of thing, I don't think there is an intelligence at work. But, however, if a spirit is earthbound and is still there, you will often find the moments and the manner of their death can become a part of their energy signature.
Mm-hmm.
The energy signature of any kind of spirit entity, whether it's a ghost or a demon a real spirit, even an astral projector has an energy signature. If you are sensitive, you will hear a bell tone in your ear. And when you hear that bell, a ringing bell tone,
mm-hmm.
like you strike a tuning fork and you get a whoo, which can vary in pitch depending on the type of the entity. You will often also get a smell. You may get a taste in your mouth. These are impressions. If you're clairvoyant, you may see a colour or a pattern or a particular thing. Now, whether like a suicide or somebody who's had a violent death, very often the moment of their death is part of this. So if you're in the presence of an entity like that, you close your eyes and next minute you see a vision of a bathtub full of blood, somebody hanging from a rope, whatever it was that killed them.
Wow. And so, but when you were in this house, did you get this clairvoyantly or did you see it?
That was clairvoyantly.
Okay.
Clairvoyantly. There was a lot of phenomena going on in that house. There's little lights floating around. You get what they call astral lights.
Mm-hmm.
And these they're a bit like an orb, but they're white, silvery color. And they sparkle and sometimes float around the house, and these usually indicate there's a lot of energy in a place, good or bad. It's just a lot of energy there, and if there is a disturbance in the force, these are very common to see in a disturbed area.
What kind of...
And they're visible to the naked eye.
Right. What kind of influence does... Because you're here in the United States and Canada and North America kind of places, the land has a deep, rich history of Indians, Native Americans, and a culture that's just absolutely amazing. And in Australia, right, the original inhabitants of the land were the long time, I should say, inhabitants of the lands were Aborigines. Is that correct? What kind of similarities or differences would the historical culture of the land that everybody's inhabiting now bring to this kind of phenomena? Could there possibly be any differences, I guess is what I'm saying, in like the legends and the way we're going about investigating these kinds of phenomena? Could there be any difference in the phenomena or the legends behind the phenomena or the reasons for them or the energy patterns or anything, because I am physically in the North Americas and you are physically in Australia, based on, you know, the historical cultures of the two different lands?
Yeah, there are differences. Metaphysically speaking, energy-wise, there are not a lot of differences, but the phenomena is different. For example, the nature spirits and some of the negative entities, demons, and that type of thing are different. In Australia, they have more of an Australian theme. For example, you will find entities which are part animal, part kangaroo, part, you know, local. Whereas in America you have bear and bison and lions and things, which we don't have down here. So you'll find the native animals have quite a big effect upon what you will see and in the nature of what they do.
Interesting, because that was one of the questions that I know it was totally off topic, or I'm just throwing things out, but that's one of the things that I had thought of asking even yesterday, but we were just doing a time check, so I didn't ask you. But that's something that really interests me, is the historical inhabitants of the land, the people who took care of it, the people who lived at one with nature, and then, and then of course we all sort of, you know, took over and you know, now we've got our own sets of issues to deal with the current inhabitants of much of the land. So I was wondering what if there would be differences, and it sounds like there would be.
The nature of the American Indians and the Australian Aborigines are quite similar.
Okay, so they were, you know, the obviously very rich in culture. Right, very rich cultures,
yeah.
Very rich. They have their own belief systems, their own way of dealing with the world, but they lived closely with nature and with the land that they inhabited, right? So one would think that they would know a lot more of what's going on than we would, living in, you know, homes made of plastic and concrete and man-made things.
Well, the Australian Aborigines, the real ones, you could say, that still live on the land. They have a matriarchal society where the tribes are ruled by the old woman,
mm-hmm.
as they call her, and their spiritual practices are completely separate. Men have what they call men's business,
mm-hmm.
and women have what they call women's business, and they never mix their spiritual practices. And there's a few differences, but the basics are pretty similar, I think.
Interesting. You mention animal spirits several times now already.
Yes.
How predominant are animal spirits? Is it to run across animal spirits? Because one of the things I have not done while ghost hunting, and although I do hear stories, and I've, you know, heard stories of, you know, animal spirits and animal ghosts and things like that, I've not actually thought of looking for them or photographing them or anything like that in my scientific studies. I'm wondering how predominant those kinds of things are.
Claire, in the astral or in the real time zone close to the physical, there's quite a lot of different animalistic type entities which are very common, and the most common ones, unfortunately, are not very nice. The you get, for example, snake-like entities, very large spider-type entities, and scorpion-type entities, and various insects like that. And these are quite, when you look at them clairvoyantly, they look to be, you imagine a scorpion that's about a meter long, a yard long.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, and very often, you know, the things that drunks, alcoholics see when they see spiders on the walls and things like that,
mm-hmm.
snakes. Very often they are having, like, they've, through their alcohol abuse, they've gained astral sight for a while, and they're seeing into the astral around them. And that often, of course, they have a lot of negative energy in them, and they're attracting all these things. So, yeah.
How does one stay positive, then? The back to practical psychic self-defense. How would you go about, or could you even go about, if you're a ghost hunter and you know you're going to do this, because, well, that's what we do. We go to cemeteries, we go to haunted houses, we go to places of legend, and we're going to do it because we're sort of, it's our hobby, it's our passion, it's what we do. We want to collect evidence, we want to get the photos, we want to get the temperature readings and the recordings if we possibly can. We're going to do it. So we might as well do it as safely as possible. We know the water thing now, thank you. But what are other things you can do? I mean, because I know that a lot of people, we say a prayer, we connect with our highest power just before going into a place and then as we leave. But that's the kind of stuff that we do. What other kinds of things could we do, or is that pretty much all we can hope to do?
Well, that's good beforehand, but if you come under a negative entity type attack or influence, the fear that is generated can be extreme. So it's impossible to do any kind of visualization or prayer in a state where you are, you know, approaching hysteria. And this is why I've focused on physical things that you can do very easily and take advantage of. For example, and knowing a little bit about how entities work, for example, they don't travel very well. If you are under an attack in one room, simply leaving that room and going to another, it will usually stay behind and you'll get a break. Or leaving the house, walking outside, will usually leave it behind you. Other things that you can do, I should actually come up with a ghost hunter's kit, some suggestions of what the wise ghost hunter would carry with them. One of the things I would suggest would be a good quality air freshener,
mm-hmm.
of, say, lavender, sandalwood, things like that. Because with an air freshener, like a pressure pack, you can change the atmosphere of a room very, very quickly by spraying it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make a room smell nice, you change the atmosphere, it will interfere with negative manifestations. Other things you could use, there are various herbs and things that you can burn. There's sage, rosemary. Fumigants are very good if you need to cleanse an area of negative energy. Fumigating a house, for example, will solve 99% of spirit problems if you fumigate it properly. Using sulfur is the best of all to fumigate with. next to that, Red Hot Chili Peppers and Black Mustard Seed. They're about the best fumigants, and that will cleanse. Those substances destroy negative energy, and the idea is, you remove the negative energy from a place for fumigation, and then after you've aired the house out, you would burn sweet incense, mm-hmm. essential oils, and make the place smell really nice, which tends to attract good spirit energies. And when you get an accumulation of good spirit energy in a house, it tends to be very repellent of negative energies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those are some of the things. Light is very important. Light's a good countermeasure. So even having a powerful torch or two or some way to light up, flares, things like that would be good. You can use fire, by the way, to break an attack. Like crossing running water, if you lay down a couple of sheets of newspaper and set fire to them, for example, and you cross through the flames quickly, that will often shake off an entity.
That's absolutely fascinating. It sounds like, for the first part, you know, the fire thing is great if you're under attack, right? If you're under attack, you need the fire or the water to break it off and get rid of that. But the other one, it sounds like you're trying to you change the energies of a room. You change the energies of a house or of an atmosphere through one of the most powerful sense that humans have is smell. Even though, you know, we don't pay all that much attention to it, it's actually listed as the most powerful sense. And so what happens is you use that to make people more comfortable, at ease, and lighten their moods, and lighten change what the room is like, to go from somewhere depressing and evil to, you know, a little bit happier and more light, more happier.
Well, that is one effect of changing what a scent can do, or a perfume. It affects the people in the room and the ambience and the atmosphere. But what it also does, it has a strong effect on entities. Now, being astral creatures, their sense of smell is many, many times keener than a normal human's. So they, what they smell is very, very strong. And another thing I'd recommend for ghost hunters to carry is a big bunch of fresh garlic.
Ooh, okay.
Garlic is very effective for as a countermeasure, but it must be sliced open. A garlic cloves on their own, if you don't slice them, are useless.
Mm-hmm.
But if you slice them open in little rounds and place them around a room, you get quite a strong smell built up very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And why it works so effectively is it releases a natural sulfur into the atmosphere, which is damages negative energies. That's
wow.
Why the garlic is a very effective countermeasure.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I can picture it. Self-defense for ghost hunters. Little kids.
Yeah, now keep in mind here, your feet and your hands are the most vulnerable parts of you. You, especially the feet. In a metaphysical energy sense, you can imagine your feet. Now, all the meridians, if you understand acupuncture, Qigong, mm-hmm. all the meridians of your body end in the feet and the hands, and to end in the ears as well, but mm-hmm. especially the feet. Now, the surface of the earth has a layer of energy over it. We can't see it. It can be detected. Now, we have, you could say, roots coming down from our feet, and which go into this energy field. And in that sense, we are bound to, you could say, the magnetic energy field of the Earth. We're part of this planet. And this is how these negative entities gain access to a person. They come up these roots through the feet and up over the body until they find a weak point, and then they would enter it, your body. And the weak point could be on, say, your left elbow, could be anywhere. And it's mm-hmm. a reason why these weaknesses can be in various places, what I call core images. But yeah, so they come up through the feet. Now, it's quite common if you go to a heavily negative infested area, you will find sharp jabbing pinpricks in the feet will be a symptom of something going on, and that's usually a good idea, good indicator, a good time to leave the area or at least move a bit, because you could be standing in a concentration of negative energy.
Very interesting.
Have you ever experienced that?
Fortunately for me, no. But there may be people that I know who have. And so evidently I've been protected myself somehow, but by either my rituals or my own, you know, what I've done. But if I queried perhaps 10 of my ghost hunting friends, I wonder if there isn't a percentage who have. So, and if so, that's something we have to watch out for.
Yeah, you may experience this while you're in a haunted house or something like that, but you may also experience it afterwards. And the most likely time would be when you go to bed and you're trying to get to sleep. Mm-hmm. If you've picked up something in your travels, it will always go for your feet. You will feel pinpricks, I mean, like someone's jabbing you with a thumbtack, mm-hmm. Quite noticeably. You'll also feel like a fluttering in the feet, maybe localized to one side of the heel or the top of the foot or underneath it. Imagine if you had a butterfly or a moth held against you and it's sort of fluttering trying to get away.
Mm-hmm.
So, like that. And when you get something like that, there's countermeasures for breaking that up. Because when an entity interacts with a human being, it's quite a delicate energetic process and it's quite easily interfered with. For example, you can slice open some garlic and rub that into your feet. That can help a lot. You could also use lotions, like strong smelling ones like tea tree oil,
mm-hmm.
And the strong goanna oil, and rub that into the feet, and that will make a difference. You can also use body awareness actions, like the energy work I've developed, to break up any interference you get in the feet or anywhere in the body for that matter.
Very interesting. I is this all in your book?
Yeah, it's all there. I also explain in there how I became possessed once and which almost killed me, and how I broke it.
So
which
you
also had to do with
This had to have been before you knew all this stuff, right? I mean,
oh yes.
Could you get possessed now that you know all these stuff and have done all the experiments, or like is it something that even somebody who knows? I mean, because there's people who do things, you know, stupid things, because we're all people and humans and we do stupid things sometimes. And I know, for example, if I drink a lot, I'm going to, you know, be stupid and do that stuff. And I haven't drank in like 12 years, but you know, that's my own thing. But you know, I know that I'm a human. I can do stupid things. Could you, knowing what you know, put yourself in a bad position again? Do you think?
Well, I put myself in bad positions all the time, because very often I have to stand between the people I'm helping and what is happening. I've learned an enormous lot over the years. But when this happened to me, I was like early 30s, and which was 15 years or so ago, and I did some really stupid things, and which I don't recommend.
I've been there too, so.
Yeah, well, I was doing, I was trying to heal when it happened to me. I had helped people many, many times with healing and removing entities from people through healing the process, and I'd been like invulnerable to these things, until one day I was trying to help this young boy, 5 years old, who had a serious entity problem, and I was trying to banish this entity from this boy and give him healing, and nothing was working. This boy was sowing glamour with the entity. Every time I got rid of it, he would call it back. He admitted it. And anyway, I got totally exasperated one night, and I did something really stupid in that I gave the entity permission to enter me in exchange for letting the boy go. It was sort of like, take me and leave the child thing.
Mm-hmm.
Bad mistake. Yeah.
Ouch.
This thing struck me like, imagine being punched in the mouth very hard, and it was like a physical blow, and it paralyzed me, sitting in a chair in front of this boy. Now, where it hit me was in the bottom lower right lip, and where it hit me, it swelled up on the inside of the mouth to the size of a grape, probably, inside there, and bled a little bit. And this was like within seconds of being attached there. Now, this type of thing is very common. If you are attacked and possessed or attached to by a higher order entity of the, you know, demonic type and that ilk, this is the major symptom. It's called stigmata diabolis, the devil's mark, they used to call it. This was the primary evidence used during the witch hunts to indict witches, was to search the body for a physical blemish of this kind. Now, when this happened to me, apart from being tortured for half an hour, I eventually broke out of it and collapsed on the floor. But this lump in the mouth, over the next couple of days, quickly hardened to a gristly lump.
Mm-hmm.
And I still got the scar there. And now, technically, stigmata diabolis, if they find it, it has to be a hard, gristly lump, which is on or beneath the skin. And that if you pierce it with a needle, it neither hurts nor bleeds. And this is exactly that type. It's like a little granuloma, gristly type lump. Now, the interesting thing is, and I've observed this in other cases as well, the moment that I depossessed myself a few weeks later, the instant that that happened, this lump in my mouth burst into 100 pieces and bled. And I was spitting out bits and pieces and blood, and there was a big hole in my lip on the inside. And it's absolutely that was the point of attachment, and the moment it, you know, you break the attachment, that explodes. And I've come across a number of cases that this is, you know, which this is predictable, this is what's going to happen. And historically, if you look for chance, your material, you'll find this mentioned as well.
Well, I hate to mention this then, but I've had these gristly lumps in my ears before, in my ear lobes. It's a
in the earlobe.
Yeah, but it doesn't burst or
which
bleed.
Ear?
Both.
Both ears.
Both ears. And
mate, you're dog meat.
I'm dog meat. I hate that. But no, they've gone away. They've gone away.
Oh, I'm kidding.
I haven't had them in a long time. But the, you know, this was when I was younger. But well, all the way up through college, probably. And
but keep in mind here, there are natural causes for these types of lumps appearing.
Okay.
But if they appear as a result of like a massive entity attack.
Well, I wonder. I wonder if perhaps I don't know now because it's not happened in a number of years. But if perhaps my body was rejecting or, you know, dealing on a spiritual nature with things. And it could have been worse. One, because I don't know now. I didn't analyze it. I thought it was, oh, I got a lump in my ear, you know. And you know, I went through.
It's possible.
Is it cancer? Is
these things can have completely natural causes, like little tumors and things like that. But I mean, there is quite a difference. I mean, you would know if you had a major attachment on you. You would know all about it.
Oh, okay.
It's not something you would not notice.
Okay, that might have just been something natural and. Yeah, okay, cool.
It can be.
What?
Along those lines, you can remove most lumps, including moles and little tumors, even freckles and skin blemishes, with a ballpoint pen.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's a weird thing I discovered many years ago, and it works. It's probably about 50% of moles and skin blemishes will respond to this. But in my opinion, the majority of moles and skin blemishes are attachment points, because the outer layer of your aura, your energy sheath, is represented by the skin. And if anything penetrates the outer layer of your energy sheath, it can cause a skin blemish or a mole or something. Now, the vast majority of things which attach to people are completely harmless. They are no more dangerous than a jellyfish or a barnacle on a ship's hull. They're just tiny little energy feeding things like mosquitoes. There's nothing, you know, they're very, very common. But the interesting thing is, if you draw say you have a little mole on your arm, for example, if you get a blue ballpoint pen and you draw a little spider's web around it, or a harmonic cross, which is a cross within a circle, it's easy to draw, and you leave it there, a lot of these skin blemishes will actually start to dry up and will fall off within a couple of weeks if you keep that on.
Fascinating. I'm going to try that. If I get anything like that that I notice, I'll try it.
It's in my book, the instructions on how to do this, and I've removed hundreds of them of people, and it's quite amazing. And it doesn't leave a scar.
Awesome. Awesome. I have a question. Yeah. Your book, it's on like Amazon.com and all that stuff?
Yes, if you go to my website, www.astraldynamics.com, go to the library section, there's direct links there to my books, all three of them, Astral Dynamics, Practical Psychic Self-Defense, and Mastering Astral Projection. And you can click straight through, and if you go through my website, I've got an affiliate link there, I get like 50 cents for each one you buy or something.
Right. And that'll go directly to you.
Amazon's the best place to buy it.
Oh, yeah. Because that's, like, pretty much direct. I really like Amazon for that. One question, and then we have to make way for W Paranormal, which is the next show. But Moto Jojo in the chat rooms, because we've been monitoring the chat rooms and even asking you questions. But one interesting question that came through, Moto Jojo in the chat room said, remember when we were talking about all these different things? You could bring aerosol, you know, freshener. You can bring garlic cloves and protect a place and things like that if you cut it up and put them around the perimeter. Okay, if you carry all this stuff with you on a ghost hunt, could just having the stuff minimize your chances of getting photographs and EVP recordings and things like that, just having the stuff? Or is it when you use the stuff that is when, you know, if you need to use the stuff, is that when it would, like, would it lessen your chance of getting good evidence of afterlife?
No, I don't think it would work that way. These things on their own, like a can of air freshener in your bag, is really innocuous. I mean, it's just something that's there that could be used, and I really don't think that would affect your
running across the good entities
in experiencing any kind of phenomena or observing it. No, I really don't think that would stop it.
So bring it with
you. Most of these entities, once you start applying countermeasures, you would actually get the opposite effect if you were trying to get some observable phenomena to photograph and record. Once they know that you know about them and you know something, you know, you're trying to do with them, let's say you're slicing up garlic and that, then literally the gloves come off and they become way more active.
Okay. Because they're trying to get you to stop doing that.
Yeah, they're usually quite secretive about their behavior. And they can get quite active once they know you know about them.
Interesting. But, so basically, bring it with you and use it if necessary. And only when necessary.
And it's very simple things. A bit of garlic, you know. Take some hot chilies if you need them. Find a fry pan if you want to do some fumigation. And,
very interesting stuff.
By the way, noise is also good. Firecrackers are good.
Oh, wow.
You find the Chinese use them for breaking up astral lights and energies. Getting a couple of large saucepans together, making a lot of noise, banging them together, percussion, is also effective for breaking up astral lights and manifestations.
Very, very interesting. Robert Bruce, thank you so very much.
You're welcome. We'll do it again one day.
I do hope so. And hopefully not because we've experienced something negative and had to employ any of these countermeasures, but hopefully on a good thing like a book release or things like that. That would be awesome.
It'll be great. Every Ghostbuster out there must get a copy of that book of mine, Back to a Psychic Self-Defense. It's required reading.
I'm believing so now that I've heard you speak about it. It's going to be something. It's going to be on my shelf soon, believe me. Thank you so much, Robert Bruce, for joining us.
You're welcome. Bye.
Excellent. Bye-bye. So that was Robert Bruce, Practical Psychic Self-Defense, also the Astrodynamics book. He's permanently linked up on our website at www.ghostlytalk.com. And right now, though, this is it.
Yeah, we got to go.
Will, we got to go. We got to make way for W Paranormal, because W Paranormal is coming up next on Pioneer. This show has been, of course, Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And Scott L. has vacated the premises again real quick, because he's not in the haunted basement. Went off in, what, the second hour?
Yeah.
But I have to say, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you so much. Learn from this. I know I have learned. And visit our website at www.ghostlytalk.com. Pioneer, of course, pioneer.rolo.net. W Paranormal's coming up next. I'm going to just clear the air for them. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week when we'll have Tamara Thorne on.
Science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from the Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.